Paul Vallis is here. He's the CEO, former CEO of Chicago Public Schools. We know him. He ran for mayor, too, and he's been out front in the school reopening debate. How you doing, Paul?
I'm good, Anna. How are you?
You know, pretty good. Pretty good. I saw you at the rally over the weekend. It was for Stevenson High School, I believe, in Lincolnshire. And I know they're talking about, hey, we want a hybrid option. They're already doing it in the Archdiocese. A lot of other schools, high school level, are not doing it. And, you know, you've been outspoken about this. You feel like they can safely do it and should, is the feeling I got from you.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. You know, first of all, I connected with these groups actually over social media because since April, I've been posting things on how to reopen schools safely and how to do remote learning, how to have an effective remote learning plan. So over the coming months, you know, I've established good contact. So I've gotten invited to a number of places to speak on the reopening of schools. Let me point out that all the science, the closing of schools, even the going remote, defies science. It just blatantly ignores and defies the science. Like Nutura decided to go full to go back to full remote because they had 11 positive cases among 4,000 students. I mean, this is a virus. It's a virus that's not impacting young people to any significant degree. The young people are also least likely to be contagious. And at the end of the day, we could be living with this virus for another 6, 7, 8 months before they have a vaccine and before that vaccine is obviously deployed. So it defies, it's a blatant defiance of the science. That's number one. Number two, all the research points to the extreme damage that remote instruction does to students. All the research points out to the academic degrading, to the social emotional issues, to just the whole sedentary healthcare, physical health challenges that individuals face. And when you look at the increase in domestic violence, the spike in opioid addictions, look at the shooting of juveniles in Chicago, for that matter, teen suicides, all those numbers are pointing in the wrong direction, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that schools, at least through November, will have been effectively closed for 8 consecutive months. So real damage is being done here, and the most significant damage is being done to poor children. Only 1 in 6 Black and Latino parents can work remotely. That means children are either left home alone, or for that matter, or the parents can't go back to work. So I just think that this is, unfortunately, I think it's more political than it is about children's safety.
So you're the superintendent of New Trier School District, and you get 11 COVID cases. What would you do in that case?
Well, number one, you hope, well, first of all, none of these children seem to be getting infected in school. You see, people say, oh, my God, COVID, you're going to come to school, they're going to spread the infection. They're already spreading the infection. Do we think children are socially distancing at home? They're not. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reason there's a spike in individuals in younger people getting the infection is because they're least affected by it, and they're not engaging in social distancing practices. They're not walking around wearing masks and things like that. I submit to you that the schools are probably among the safest places. But if you have the right health safety programs in place, if you're temperature checking, if you're doing, if you have the right social distancing, if you're wearing the masks, if you purchase the plexiglass one step beyond, purchase plexiglass separators, which are extraordinarily, cost effective. You see them now when you go to restaurants,
yeah,
or you go to stores and things like that. I mean,
everyone.
You can easily... Yeah, exactly. You can easily create a safe and secure environment for these young people. And then, obviously, if you're infected, you quarantine. And if there are individuals who came into contact with you, you do the same thing. So the bottom line is you have a plan. But the parochial private schools have opened without any sort of controversy.
Hold that thought, Paul. Hold that thought, because I want to ask you what we know about that. I know there has been some issues with just getting access to information on that, but I want to ask you what you know, because you're Paul Vallis, and you may know more than we know. Back with Paul Vallis, former CEO of Chicago Public Schools. And, Paul, I know you were asking for, were you part of the rally where they were asking for a hybrid choice, mm-hmm, for Stevenson High School? There was a big rally out there, too. And, you know, we mentioned the point that is we look to other school districts that are open, the Archdiocese and such. I know there's a little bit of trouble getting some of the information there, but I wonder what you know and what you've learned or heard about schools that are open. What do you know?
Well, you know, I haven't heard anything negative. The what I've been told is that things are going pretty smoothly when they have cases, and they're always a very, very limited number. They have quarantine procedures in place. A lot of the schools obviously have the skip tracing where they try to track who the students have been in contact with. But, you know, when they have a couple cases, they just do not shut down altogether. And look, it's almost as if the media has been searching for cases so that they can have another sensational story about two or three kids in a very large school getting COVID, and somehow that this is going to be a life or death situation when children are least affected and when they're least likely to spread the virus, and when they're contracting the virus, not in school, but they're actually contracting it at home. So you've got to really weigh the damage that's being done to these children academically, social, emotionally, from a healthcare standpoint. And you've got to ask yourself, particularly when it comes to poor children or children who have families that can't work remotely or may not be able to go to work if they have to be at home monitoring their kids, you have to think about the damage that's being done there. I mean, talk about widening the achievement gap. There's nothing like full remote learning to make that happen.
Let's go to the phone here because I think Debbie wants to jump into this conversation from her perspective. Go ahead, Debbie. What's on your mind?
Well, my kids are grown. I don't have to deal with this. And I honestly don't know what the answer is. But I believe West Des Moines yesterday just reported that a teacher's aide got the virus at the school. The principal called her when she was going to visit her mother who was having surgery. The teacher's aide got the virus. She infected her mother, and the teacher's aide actually passed away. She died from the virus in the hospital. So, yeah, we're talking about 4,000 kids, but honestly, I work in a place where no one wears masks because I live in Iowa, and I wear a mask. There's only one other person in my company that does, and we have to be able to account for those people and not just say it is what it is and let those people die. I mean, yeah. And I don't know how to do that so that they don't get sick or don't pass away from it and still get our kids back in school and learning.
Yeah, Debbie, it's an important point, and it's important to say it because that's one of the issues that you constantly hear is that without enough testing, without constant access to some sort of testing, would you be exposing folks? Paul, I mean, I want to ask you about this, that, you know, you just don't know if you've been exposed to a group of kids that have it and you bring it home to someone unsuspectingly.
Well, you know, the kids who are getting infected are not getting infected in school. They're getting infected at home. I mean, individuals who are getting infected. The individual in question, did she get infected in school or did she get infected at home? Look, my sons are first responders. They both had COVID. Their fiancés had COVID. They're back at work. You know, it was modest flu-type symptoms. But I'm not naive about the threats of the virus for people with pre-existing conditions. You know, my two administrative assistants in New Orleans, when I worked in New Orleans, they're closer to my age. They have pre-existing conditions. And one passed away. So I'm not minimizing. I mean, if individuals have pre-existing conditions, they need to be able to teach and work remotely. There's no doubt about it. You certainly need to make exceptions. So this isn't about it is what it is. Far from it. It is what it is. It's basically saying, well, you know, what the heck? We can keep schools closed for 6, 8 months, maybe a year, maybe 2 years at the rate we're going, doing untold damage to these children. I mean, there are so many kids that are on the do you think the gangs that are recruiting kids off the street corners because they're not in school are social distancing or are following J.B. Pritzker's business quarantine procedures? At the end of the day, we're doing extreme damage to our youngest children. So this is not about opening schools carelessly. Look, you have the Chicago Teachers Union, for example. I mean, talk about social distancing. They wanted the district to go full remote. They threatened to strike if the district didn't go full remote. And then they complained that remote learning was inhumane. And then they asked for additional compensation for hazard pay. Now they're actually grievancing because they don't want the clerks. They don't want the clerks to go to school and to work in empty buildings, because they view those buildings as being unsafe. So where does it end at the end of the day?
Yeah, I suppose. if those clerks have some sort of pre-existing condition, they wouldn't be in the school is what would be the guidance. And if they had someone at home, I would assume that's also what would be recommended. If you got someone immunocompromised or in a high-risk group at home, you also would not be in the school. That's what you're saying. I get it.
Exactly. But you know, one needs to look at the research, and the scientific research says that kids need to be in school, and the research that looks at the damage that's being done when remote learning is fully substituted for in-class on-site learning. I mean, it's pretty convincing that we're going to be doing damage that's going to be revisited by this generation for a long time to come. So, you know, one needs to think to look at what to come up with a realistic plan to get these schools open at least partially. I'll tell you, you know, ultimately, I think all these schools need to have the capacity to offer what is referred to as synchronous instruction, meaning you're able to have a class going on. And if students need to be quarantined, they can tune into that class remotely. And if teachers have any sort of pre-existing conditions, they can teach that class remotely. So I think ultimately, when you consider the amount of money that we're spending on schools and how much of our property taxes go to schools, mm-hmm. coming up with that type of a program would not only help us deal with the current pandemic, but would prepare us for the next time where you face this type of health care emergency.
It seems like a good goal. You only have a minute left here, Paul, but you mentioned that both your sons are first responders. I know that. I know your wife was mm-hmm. an officer as well. You said both of your sons had COVID and both of their spouses had COVID. And I saw you post something that a lot of people were interested in as well about how 1,000 police officers and CPD have had COVID and they go
That's
back
right.
to work.
That's right. Well, my sons and their fiancés both had COVID, and they recovered with no side effects. Again, I'm not diminishing. You have pre-existing conditions. I mean, there are risks there. So that's why I cited. But yes, 1,000 police officers have gotten COVID. The general order that came down basically says don't quarantine if you have been in contact with somebody who has had COVID. Go to work. They didn't tell police who had COVID to go to work. They basically told police who had been in contact with individuals, be they citizens or other police officers, who had COVID to go to work, take your temperature, et cetera. You know, it's a bit ironic. I mean, you know, the city's imposing new quarantines on outside states, and yet, to make sure that people are returning from those states are quarantined for 15 days, and then, of course, the police officers who come into contact with regularly, probably with people with COVID, are basically being told to monitor their symptoms and return to work. It's either reckless or it's ironic. Maybe it's a combination of both.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways. I understand your point there. It just seems either both are dangerous or both are not. It just, I was surprised to see you put that out there. Hey, Paul, thank you for your time this afternoon. Well, I mean,
to
be continued, right? We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.